Welcome to Platinum Property Training's podcast, where we will be talking about business, money, and let's not forget the economy, real estate, and bringing in real inspirations. These are people that are doing some great things in our world. Like, share, add this to your playlist, and subscribe to keep track of our updates. Okay, you beautiful people, sit back, relax, let's listen, and let's get down to business. All right, you're very, very welcome back into Platinum Studios, and for this week's business podcast, we have a very, 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 very interesting guest.
Don't big it up too much now.
Whatever you're doing, pull down your blinds, lock yourself away, because this is going to be a very, very interesting. But again, thanks a million for tuning back in, everybody. What we're going to do is we're going to discover a bit of a rocky start. I know Justin well. I know you under a different name.
Yep. Most people do.
I know you in a past life. But again, you're a very, very interesting person. You're a very, very interesting past. And now you're heading into the future in a very, very unique way. And there's not many people that can do what you do.
Nothing I do that no one else can do. You know, or that can't do, should I say, you know. It's about finding something you're good at, finding something you enjoy, and getting good at it, you know. That's it, yeah. That's half the battle. Once you have something you enjoy, the rest is easy, you know.
Yeah, that's what you normally hear knocking around these walls quite a bit. Because good. Sometimes you're trying to teach people in school, or kids in school, the wrong set of stuff that they're not interested yep. in. You give someone something that they're interested in.
They're wrong with it, yeah.
So look, Justin, you're very, very welcome in. It's Justin Casey, originally known as Justin O'Malley. You can say hello into the
cameras. That's it, yeah.
All right, let me just start with a bit of an opener. I'm going to read a little bit of this out. As I told you, I'm not the best at reading, so
bear with me. Don't worry.
Here is a little bit of your notable facts of experience. Placed in foster care at the age of 2 months old. Residential unit at the age of 16. Father committed suicide. Your dad.
Yep.
Sleeping rough outside the GPO at the age of 18. Stabbed 7 times.
Unfortunately.
Be 8 today.
Or yeah, could be. We'll see.
Number one singer on iTunes. A songwriter. Support team leader at the Apollo House.
Yeah, the Apollo House. When we took over the building. We'll get into that later.
Okay. Played alongside
Maverick Sabre. Yeah, Glenn Hansard, Professor Green, the original Real Boys, Damien Dempsey, a couple of notable people. You know,
now, I would have loved him.
Yeah,
if you would have brought your guitar.
I know. I didn't get that memo. Unfortunately, right. It's not to say I can't come back and play a few songs.
We'll definitely have to.
Yeah.
Published co-author of multiple books on intelligence.
Yep. I'm not very intelligent now, but I can write books about it.
Yeah, I know. This podcast is going. And eight year training in the military. Law enforcement and intelligence
agencies to the various different governments, and like the CIAs of different governments around the world. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not as sexy as it sounds though.
So on the opener.
Yep.
You were very, very interested in the past.
We all do.
Yeah.
Life is subjective, you know.
Very, yeah. Very interesting future. coming from being a little shit.
Absolutely.
And now working with government.
Definitely.
So, Justin, you're very, very welcome. And we're dying to hear a little bit about your past. Just bring me back a little bit here. So in foster care at the age of 2 months old.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's quite difficult.
It wasn't at the time because I can't remember, which is great. Yeah. But from what I know, and funny enough, even getting to know my situation and how I ended up there, that wasn't until later on in life. And funny enough, we will talk about it later on, but that actually was the transition from me to getting into the kind of this specialty field I work in now, was actually trying to find out why was I in care, what happened, all of that, you know, because I had to go and research all that. And as I was doing that research, I was like, this is interesting stuff. And that's how I made a career of it, essentially.
So again, a terrible situation.
Yep.
Unleashed your unique ability.
Unfortunately, so I'm an open book. A lot of people, anyone that knows me knows the crack. It's two months of age. I was placed into foster care with my brother, because due to unforeseen circumstances, my other brother Aaron, he was killed, or he died. Still to this day, it's totally unclear. But it was my mother that was essentially charged with the murder. You know, okay. So we got taken from the parents at such a young age. And what was incredible was, so on the weekend that happened, like I was 2 months old. My brother was, he's exactly 2 years older than me, born the same day. I don't think it was planned, but you never know. Same day, born the same day, 2 years apart. They call it Irish twins, funny enough. But what happened on the day is the HSC, so you know Annette down with this is my foster mother. So she got a call. She used to do temporary respite foster placement. You know, like, oh, can you look after this for the weekend, this kind of stuff. And she got a call saying, look, we have a case. It was late in the night. And look, we have a case. We have two young boys. We need someone to mind them until we can allocate the proper, you know, care facilities for them, whatever it may be. And she said, okay, yeah, she took us in. It was only supposed to be the weekend. We're told just till Monday. And on Monday, we'll get them, you know, we'll find their foster homes. Yeah. And they came back then on the Monday and said, okay, look, Justin is going here and Matthew is going here. And she said, they'll never know each other. They said, well, we can't find anyone that's willing to take on two young boys at such a young age in foster care. And she said, well, look, you can't split them up. She talked with Shane, my foster dad, and a weekend ended up being over 16 years. Mm. You know, she said, well, you can't split them up. We'll keep them. Biggest mistake of our life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know her well.
Yeah. But so she ended up taking us on, you know. Big responsibility. Yeah. A huge responsibility now, you know. That's it.
So that would have brought a bit of stability back into your life, I
absolutely
assume.
Absolutely. Because growing up, you know, I was at such a young age, you don't know exactly what's going on, you know. And still to this day, and it sounds mad, but again, I think it's the human psyche, that defense element of the brain, you know, that blocks certain things out, or that creates a narrative in your mind of your memories, you know. Yeah. Sometimes we can think of a memory, and in fact, that's not actually yeah, what happened, that's how the brain stores it, that's how the brain processes just traumatic events, anything like that. It will create its own narrative, a safety structure to just confine that memory as that's how that happened. So like in my mind, it was, I didn't really know until I was maybe 15, something around that time. Like, but growing up, I knew like Uncle Jerry and Auntie Donna, it's my real mom and dad, you know, like we'd see them. We'd get to see them. We started off with like access visits in the HSE center under supervision and all.
Like these controls.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then over the years, then, you know, it's weekend visits and going away for a weekend and all of this. But I can't remember the exact turning point, but I just remember, you know, realizing one day, hold on a second. You know, okay, so I'm not really part of this family. Like obviously I am 100 million%. And that's their loss. but yeah, there's a certain turning point. And again, like I said, I don't know if it's a traumatic response to that situation, but like my brain just thinks, okay, this was you until this age, and then your life was flipped upside down, you know? But that's kind of where we got to, yeah. Yeah.
Right, so and obviously I said it clearly, I know them well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know them very well, very relaxed people. Real good people. I know there's a bit of a bad turn there over the last few months, which we'll get into later on.
Yep.
So residential care then, what the hell does that look like?
So residential care. So
apologies about this because I know of it. I just don't know the facts. I don't know.
Never know it itself. Yeah. Okay. Residential care. So the way it worked was the technical term is, you know, the foster placement broke down.
Yeah.
The reality, I was a little asshole, you know. Yeah. I was young, I was dumb, I thought I knew everything about the world, and you know, you haven't got a clue. I'm going to do my own thing, whether you like it or not. And there's only so much any parent can put up with that before they say, look, there's nothing else I can do, you know.
It just breaks.
Yeah, rebellion at every stage, you know, which I'm sure was difficult and heartbreaking for them. But I was young, dumb, I was hanging around with the lads, you know, that's all I cared about. That was it.
You just didn't see.
Yeah. So when I heard, okay, you'll be moved out to this residential, and I thought, lovely, my own gaff, you know, that's it, let's go. It's not the way it is. If anything, I don't want to put the terminology of a prison on it, but there's staff there 24 hours a day. And like, it was actually years later that I put a freedom of information request in to get all my documentation from the HSE and go through that. And you see things like the staff taking their notes. Justin was on the phone for 22 minutes today. He mentioned this word and this name and that kind of thing, you know, like everything. He didn't take a piss without it going in this book, you know. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, some of the staff there were amazing, you know, they nearly made you feel like family, you know. But then there's other staff that made it very clear your job you know, your job, and they clock off and that's it, you know. So it's hard to find a place, especially at that age. You're still impressionable, you're still vulnerable. It's hard to find a place of solitude in that situation, because you have different staff coming and people do change their job and people are transferred, and, you know, so it's a constant shift in dynamics. Yeah. So, you know, stability for a long time was something I never thought I'd get back again, you know?
And it's a game changer for you now.
Absolutely.
Again, I'm at the jumping ahead. I forgot, yep. And I roughly know your age. Just give us an idea of your exact...
I'm going to go with 21. Yeah. Now, I'm going to laugh. I'm 31 or I'm 32.
I always say the same, you know, yeah. What I mean? Depends who's watching.
I don't know if it says it there. No, it doesn't. No, it's 31 or 31. 31 years old it has there, yeah.
Right.
I think that's what I am, yeah.
You have kids in your life now?
I don't, yeah. Okay. I will one day, and I can't wait to, but I'm not at that stage yet, you know. Right,
right, so take me to, and I know this is because, again, anyone that's listening to this, I know Justin, the best part of my life.
Yeah,
don't know you very well.
No,
I'm
really
a good friend with your brother.
Yeah,
and I've seen your, I knew you when you were a little shit.
Absolutely.
And now, over the last few years, I'm like, how the name of Jay's did he actually just turn this whole thing around?
I'm still trying to work that out myself, Paul.
Well, it's super to see. Yeah. Super to see. So take me back a little bit to your dad now, because I don't know anything about that. If you're comfortable.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Yeah. So like I said, growing up, like we got access visits, we got weekends, we got these kind of things. But because of the dynamics, you know, because even after we got put into care, like my mom and dad had other kids, you know, my other brothers.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, my mom always wanted a girl. She had 7 boys and never had a girl. Yeah. So a full house. And obviously the Deborah family, they're my brothers, still are to this day, you know. But, you know, what was happening in that household, I wasn't very privy to, you know, because obviously, you know, they wanted to portray a certain thing, whatever, you know, as in this your home or your family, etc. They're not going to come out and say, oh, we had a shit week this week. You know, this is, you know, this is the good things. So at the time, I wasn't aware at all. But I found out after the fact that my dad was suffering very, very badly with his mental health and all of this. And that there was one or two attempts where he tried to take his own life and was unsuccessful. I didn't know about any of this.
Yeah.
So it was quite a shock to me. I remember I was in the residential unit at the time. And I got a phone call from my cousin, Farrell. And he says, man, are you okay? I said, yeah, of course I'm okay. What's up? Man, you don't know, do you? I said, don't know what? What are you talking about? He said, your dad's had to kill himself. I was like, what? And as crazy as it is, I remember, like it was yesterday, as cliche as that is, I took the battery on my phone because I didn't want him ringing back. I hung up and I took the battery on. I said, it's not true. Not true. So I called my mom, Annette, my foster mom, and I said, man, have you heard anything about my dad? She said, no. I said, well, right, cool. Don't worry about it. No problem at all. Chat to you later. Love you, boy. Hung up the phone. I took about 5 steps and the phone rang again. And I knew straight away. You know, I picked up the phone. And she started with, Justin, where are you? Like, she's ringing the house phone. She knows where I am.
Yeah, she's your protector now.
Yeah. She, Justin, where are you? We're on the way. Stay there. And I just knew straight away, you know. That was it.
Right. Okay. So, I know, am I correct in saying you wrote a song then at the end?
Yeah.
Sorry, all these things are starting to
come back. No, you're fine. Good.
I remember roughly the time it happened, but obviously we just remember talking and, you know, I wouldn't have known any detail about it whatsoever. Mm. So sorry if I'm just throwing in little
things. No, you're fine. So, that's what we're here for, conversations.
What was the lead up to that? Was there a bad part? Did something happen?
Funny enough, the song is called Still Wondering. And that's why it's titled that, and why it's written. The song itself is called Still Wondering, and that's what it's about. Like, still to this day, I don't know. I don't. I wish I did. But then again, I think maybe if I knew, would it make it any easier? Would it change anything? No, you know? So I don't know, but I'm still wondering, Paul. I'm still wondering.
Where do people find that song if they were listening? I know you've done a lot of YouTube stuff.
Yeah, it was on iTunes, not so much anymore. It was on iTunes. It actually went number one. Which was
brilliant.
Incredible. I remember that the day it hit, I was number one, then Ed Sheeran, then Passenger, and George Ezra. I was like, is this real? You know, is that me? So that was kick ass. That was a good, let's say, a positivity to such a negative, impactful situation.
You seem to be able to do this shit a couple of times now. You're able to turn situations around.
Yeah, it's not by choice, it's by survival, you know. It's by survival. So sometimes you don't know who you are until you have to be the person you need to be. You know, that's it, you know. So it's not until you're faced with these situations that you truly understand what you're capable of or how much you can deal with. You know, you're not made of glass. The only way to find that is to take a slap. You know, that's it. Yeah.
All right. Sorry, I went off track there.
No, you're good. You're good. Where they can find the song? You can find it on YouTube and stuff. I think it's just out in my friend's back garden. Jamming.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
Did you go to a room? Did it come to you? Did you start writing it because you were annoyed? How did you deal with that little episode?
My writing process is very much, I write for myself. If anything, music itself is my therapy. You know, a lot of different musicians will have different writing processes. You know, some of them might say, okay, this is what I'm going to write a song about. Some might say, these are the lyrics. Now let me write some music to this. Like they write it like a poem and then trying to transition it into a musical sphere, let's say, musical space. But for me, it's the opposite. You know, I would start with four chords. And typically I don't say, I'm going to write a song about this. You know, I just find some chords. That sounds good. Just keep playing the chords and add a line and add another line. And eventually you have a song at the end. And it's not until you listen back to the song from start to finish, you're like, damn, I didn't know that was on my mind. You know what I mean? So it's more of, it's like some people journal, you know, to get it out. Me, I sing.
Yeah.
Not too good. Sometimes it depends how many whiskeys I had, but, you know.
I'll tell you a quick one there. And again, we were talking about this. I know this is going to be in the later part of the show, let's say, right? Okay. But when people are watching your shit and you don't realize they're watching and all this stuff. Again, we were back in the house after doing probably an early day property deal.
Yep.
And I was sitting there summer's evening and maybe late at night and was having a bottle of beer or whatever it was, trying to chill out after the come down of a property deal and just unwinding. And I listened to that song, The Watchtower with Jimi Hendrix.
That's a good one.
And Tara walked into the room and said, did you ever hear Just Now Maddie sing that song? And I was like, where did he sing that song? And she goes, take a listen to it. I typed into YouTube, Just Now Maddie, Watchtower, fucking stood the hairs up, because we're again.
Yeah, brilliant.
Stood the hairs up the back of my neck. Yeah. I'm like, this little lad had, again, that was years ago.
So yeah, that was a long time,
Progressively, your music is something else as well.
I appreciate it. I love it. It's my therapy, you know. It's the only thing I've found substance in to deal and to process. You know, you knew me when I was younger. I was an angry kid, you know. And not to justify it by any means, you know, I thought the world of you living, all of this. Okay, when we look at it on a larger scale of things, okay, all the traumatic events, you know, that kind of behavior would be necessarily associated to such instances. But music was the only thing I found that I would actually, breathe again, you know.
Some people say, I lost my mom last year. And I need to do something now because you could see all these things creeping up.
Yeah. If you sit idle, you know,
it
will consume worse. Yeah, it will consume you.
So your way of dealing with all this, where you're trying to figure it all out or work it all out?
If anything, that's how I figure it out, you know. Get a pen to paper, get some cards going. And then I was like, okay, now I see what's on the mind. Let's break it down. Let's try tackle this, you know. Right. How can we deal with this, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Take me back to sleeping rough. How did that go from, because I actually, let's just call them, I've always called them your parents.
So do I. When I say mom and dad, you know, that's. So from the foster placement breakdown, for me being an asshole of a kid, you know,
and
gone into residential unit, and like at the end of the day, and I don't want to sit here and just curse the state, you know, but the system concurrently over the past number of decades, from what I've seen, is absolutely so failed to the people that need it the most. You know, everything from the homeless sector to the care, you know, to kids, children in care, you know. It's not just that they haven't got the mental health services, the resources are absolutely depleted. You know, they haven't got the resources to compete or to not even compete.
I'm one of the richest in the world.
Exactly, and the same can be said for the housing policy and for the children in care, you know. The way it works is when you are 18, you're no longer a child of the state. You know, you're not the state's responsibility. You are now legally classification of an adult. I was what's called a ward of court. Okay. So you have different classifications of kids in care. A ward of court is like one of the most extreme. You know, it's the most extreme. That means like when I was younger, just not to give out names and stuff, but one of our neighbors, you'd know them, wanted to bring me on to Puerto Rico on a holiday with them, you know? And I was like, yeah, cool, thinking, Mark, can I go, blah, blah. And it was a big rigmarole. I said, can you just answer? And I didn't know at the time, because I'm a ward of court, for me to leave the country, they had to go to court, they had to get a judge to sign off. It's not even just check it out. Like they literally needed the judge to sign a document because I'm property of the state. My legal guardian from the age of 2 months old to 18 is someone in an office, and I've never met them in my entire life. Right. And that's my legal guardian, you know? So when it was, I think it was 2 weeks before my 18th birthday, they kicked me out of residential unit. Now, whether it was justified or not, probably was. I can't remember the exact instance.
I like the way you're open with this. The way you're like, I was a pain in the arse.
Oh, absolutely.
But you're also justifying that your pain in the arse came because you're trying to figure shit out in your life.
Yeah.
Which is fine, which will help younger people maybe listen to this. Yeah. Or older people there.
Yeah, I hope so. So I got kicked out 2 weeks before my 18th birthday. Had they waited 2 weeks, instead of kicking me out then, this is what makes me think it was slightly personal. Had they waited them 2 weeks, what would have happened is I would have been placed in the aftercare services with Focus Ireland with that. And with actual aftercare, they help you with whether it's HAP or whether it's housing or whatever you need. You have all them supports.
Yeah.
I was kicked out before I was 18, so I was on the streets then. I was now part of the homeless demographic, then the aftercare support demographic, you know. I remember my first night.
Which is just to clear here, it's sleeping bag and that's the
street. It's sleeping bag if you're lucky. They only have a certain amount of them to hand out each night. You know, so if you're lucky. Well, if you're lucky, you get a hostel. But we'll talk about that now, yeah? So I remember the very first night I spent homeless. So you call up this number, this free phone, 1-800-707-707. If anyone ever needs it, call them up. It's the only point of contact for homeless services within Dublin. And without the whole country, to be honest. And you call up this number, you give your name, your PPS number, and you say, I need to avail of homeless services. They say, okay, where are you now? And they'll check the system. But back then, the way it worked, I don't know if it's still the same today. I think it is, though. But back then, you know, when was the last time you've seen a payphone in Dublin? They're around, but they're sporadic and they're hard to see. You know, they've slowly gotten rid of them. But back then, that's what you do. You'd go to a payphone and there'd be a queue of five people all waiting to ring the free phone. You know, so you queue up and you wait, and usually there's fights where someone comes along and I'm going in there, I'm calling the free phone, I'm getting a bed, because they've only certain allocations of beds within Dublin City Centre.
Yeah.
You know, and at the minute we've over 10,500 people homeless. I don't think they have anything close to that in terms of actually.
Someone actually said to me the other day we're hitting 14,000.
Easily, yeah. So you call up this number and they say, okay, blah, blah. He said, okay. Listen, go up to Charlemont Street. There's a place, they call it the Sancta Maria. Okay. And they said, go up to Charlemont Street. There's a place there, knock on the door, give your name. I said, cool, lovely. Right. I went up. I was down at the O'Connor Bridge. There used to be a place, Sweeney's or something, a pub there across from that was where the payphone was. And so I walked up to Charlemont Street. I got up there. I walk in. You walk in on the left, there's a little reception area. It's two young lads there, probably. And not a couple of years older than me at the time. And I sign in. He says, cool, your bed's upstairs around room two. He says, go in there to the right. There's a chill out area. You can smoke in there, you know, whatever. So, right, handy. Don't have to sit on the cold, because this was back in the winter of 2000. And I could be way off now. 2006, 2008.
Okay.
It was like the worst winter we had in over 10 years. Yeah. And so I thought, lovely. Don't have to stay outside and smoke, it's freezing out there. Lovely, a bit of heat. Went in, cup of tea, and into the smoking room. And I look over to the corner, and the lads are smoking heroin on the foil. And I was 17 at the time, maybe. You know what I mean? 17, 18.
Like a kid.
Yeah. And I'm looking, I'm saying, Jesus Christ. So I walk out, and I said, look, pal, not to be a rat around, but do you know what the boys are doing in there? Like, he says, yeah, but look, as long as they're quiet, they're not killing each other, we recommend you just go to bed. I said, right, cool. So I walk up. So I find room two and I walk in, and not to be rude, but the smell, you know, like, which is totally understandable, because I got like that as well, being homeless for a number of months. You have no access to changing clothes, to new clothes, to washing clothes, to having a shower, you know, all these facilities are very, very limited. Even getting access to anything like that, maybe join a gym or something, that's about it. But I remember that's one of the main things I remember as I walked into the room. And you walk in, and it's like someone called their uncle instead of a carpenter. You know, Uncle Tom's fairly handy with a hammer. You know, they said, right, make 6 bunk beds. And it's like someone just thrown it up in the space for a couple of hours. There was a line of bunk beds on one side and a line on the other. And you hear everyone snoring and stuff, whatever. But this is the kind of place you get into bed and you tie your laces. You know, that's it. Yeah, 100%. And I couldn't sleep. Okay, first time home of services. I was young. I'm in a room with a load of bleeding grown men. I don't know who the hell they are, you know, and like that. I've seen active drug use in the facility, you know, so I was scared. I was frightened.
And did that actually give you, from, say, you being this, sorry, I'm not going to say this again, but say
no,
you
go for it, yeah.
Little pain in the ass, yeah, you're like, oh, da, 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 and you're under protection of everyone. Yeah. And next thing you get into this world and you're like, fuck.
You're going from being let's say, a big fish in a small sea, or whatever it's called, to a small sea in it, or a small fish in a big sea. Do you get me?
Right.
Yeah, because I'm going from a place where I'm, you know, I'm the lad.
You can
know,
throw
I'm
a bit of weight around. Yeah. You're going to be
and
left
now
back
I'm
in
an environment where I'm like, I don't feel safe here at all. You know, so straight away that shift in dynamic, which, don't get me wrong, is probably good for me. You know, take me down a peg or two, make me be a bit more humble. And I remember I couldn't sleep, and I went to the bathroom, and I went to the bathroom, and I opened the door, and there's a young lad there. He must have been about 18. And he's lying on the floor with a needle in his arm, and his eyes closed. I didn't know whether he was dead or not. I said, fuck this, I'm not staying here. So I got all my stuff. I told the lads, appreciate it, I'm not staying here. I think a man's dead up there. Best of luck. And I walked out the door. And I went to Stephen's Green Park. It was closed. I had to jump over a fence into it. And I remember sitting there, like, I'm not messing. It's snow, like about a foot of snow. And I'm sitting in that, and I'm thinking, if I fall asleep here, I'm not waking up. Yeah, so I remember I kept myself awake till about 7 o'clock, and I walked down to the Grafton Street, to the McDonald's. And I walked in, and I remember, fair play, I walked in, the security guard, he just looked at me as if you've had a rough night, kid. He says, go upstairs. That's all he said. I didn't say, oh, can I get a sleep or anything? I just looked at him. He says, go upstairs. And so it must happen a lot. So I went upstairs. I lay down at the back of the place. There was a little bench thing. I lay down, and I said, I got an hour of sleep. And he came up. He said, look, the manager's after getting here. You're gonna have to go, kid. So I went on, and that was me. That was it. I was like, okay. I walked out at McDonald's, thinking, okay, this is the rest of my life. This is day one. Like, what the hell? Where am I gonna go here? What's gonna happen here? And yeah, and it was like that for quite a bit, because of, you know, don't get me wrong. I know not all the hostels, right now are definitely not like that. I'm actually a manager working in a hostel now at the minute, and I have done for the past number of years, and it's nothing like the way it was then. But I am very much aware that there is facility still to this day.
There is,
just as bad,
just as bad, if not worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did that lad die that night?
I don't know.
The door and gone.
But there was a different guy. I can't even remember his name, as bad as it is. A different guy that used to meet for breakfast, because he was, well, at the time I thought, I still don't know to this day, I don't want to make assumptions, but because when you're in that environment, when you're in home services, there's only certain places you can go for food, you know, for maybe to access laundry or something like that, you know, so you get to see all the same people, you know. Yeah. And it's a very difficult place once you get into that pattern and that routine, because you haven't got the stability to think, okay, where am I going to be next week? You're thinking, where am I going to eat today? You know, It looks like it's going to rain. Where am I going to stay out of the rain?
Survival mode.
So you're in that constant progression, because you just get through that day, and the next day is just surviving that day and that day.
Right.
So you haven't got that stability to say, okay, what do I need? I need to sign up the app. I need to go to this. I need to do this. You know, I need to go to viewings. I need to speak to landlords.
You're just slowly drowning.
And it's very difficult unless you break out of that scenario. And that catalyst for me for change and that transition was the guy, I can't remember his name, as heartbreaking as it is, but we used to meet up with him. He was one of the ones that would be around, and he liked to drink. He used to get this, it was called White Blanca, and he used to get out Littles on Moore Street, and we'd go halves on it, and we'd drink that. It's like a wine or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was. But we'd drink that, and we'd float around for the day. And we used to meet every morning, because we'd be in different hostels. We'd meet every morning. He used to stay at the flats there across from the Jervis, the back of the Jervis. And I went down one morning to grab him, to go get a coffee and decide what we're going to do for the day. And he was dead. He was frozen on the ground. Dead. Yeah. So that for me, that was the main catalyst where I said, you know what? This is not me. This is not what I want.
So this little hard cookie wasn't so hard end. You realized, fuck this.
Yeah. I said, I can't do this. That was it. And things changed. I started busking, started raising some money, you know, through busking and stuff.
Had you identified in any part of your life at this point that you were able to sing or you were able to make songs, or was there any, you fucking humming shit in your head at night time?
My mom got me guitar lessons when I was younger and stuff, you know, so I knew I could play and I could play a couple of songs and stuff. And that's actually how I got into the music, was because I contacted Lisa, my sister, and I asked her for, there was a guitar at my mom's house. I said, will you drop it out? I says, I need to make money. I'm not going to
play a little better when you're struggling.
That's it. I'm telling you, the songs, they can hear the pain. Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. Because at the end of the day, people associate homelessness with crime, okay, and with drugs and drug addicts and stuff. Yes, a lot of people may end up in that situation due to that element, but you also have a lot of people that went in from just normal lives, got in a bad situation, and ended up then having what they believed, no other resource than to resort to crime, resort to this, you know. So
I think if we all look at ourselves here, everyone's quick to judge.
Yeah,
everyone's absolutely quick to fucking throw it, you know.
Yeah, and when you're in that situation,
Have to, or their survival.
They feel that they have to, you know. Yeah, that's it. Thankfully, I could resort to other means.
How did you get stabbed 7 times?
Yes.
Your brother done any of them? He would have finished you out.
No, he really killed me. Yeah, he the only man with one arm. He hit me a slap about six months ago or something, and I just didn't see it coming. He was one arm, and I thought, lovely. I only had to watch the one. And next minute I blinked and I was like, what the hell? What happened there? Yeah. He's quick. But how did I get stabbed 7 times? Just a dispute. It was actually with a friend at the time, someone I grew up with. I won't get too much into it, but he's actually classified as Ireland's most violent inmate now at the minute. Yeah, he gets fed with like 7 prison officers and screens and all that, yeah.
Right.
So 5 of them kicked in my door and tried to kill me, yeah. Right. So what happened was I was with a girlfriend at the time, I won't say her name, she's next, she'd kill me. But we're only at the ordering pizza. I went down and got the pizza. Obviously they were watching the house. So I ordered the pizza and then I went back upstairs and I heard the doorbell go again. I thought, you forgot the can of Coke, you forgot the dips, gave me the wrong change.
The dips.
Yeah, whatever. I hate when they forget the dip. So I went down and I went to open the door and I looked out and I seen who it was. I said, all right, cool, he wants to talk, whatever, let's talk. I opened the door and then 4 other lads came running around the corner with balaclavas on. And I tried to slam the door shut, and they had the foot in the door and they just heaved through the door and I opened up a bit and I got a smack of a hammer to the head and that made me fall back. And then they came in, all I heard is stab him. And it was just knives, screwdrivers, everything just digging into my leg. I remember just putting me back up against into the corner, just thinking if they get me in the side, I'm dead, that's it. So it literally just kicking my legs and they're just grabbing my legs as I was kicking and sticking in screwdrivers.
And I
remember the girlfriend I was with at the time. I just remember her looking at she got to the top of the stairs and she's screaming. And I just remember looking at her saying, stay there. So then the ambulance ended up arriving. Well, my friends actually showed up before that. I heard handbrakes outside and I thought, bollocks, they're coming back to finish me off. And one of the lads went in, dooty. And he called the ambulance and the ambulance man came. And me again, young and dumb and full of pride. He says, listen, he says, we need to put you into this wheelchair and get you to the hospital. I said, I'm walking out of this house, you know, get in the wheelchair. No, I'm walking out. I'm grand. I don't want anyone seeing me going out like that.
Mm.
And I took 2 or 3 steps and I woke up in the hospital.
So that leads us to a very, very interesting life where you've had lots of ups, lots of downs.
Mm.
You've had lots of challenges. So, I mean, there's a lot of people you can actually go on.
Do you know what I skipped over? And she'll kill me because the last podcast I done, I totally skipped over it as well. And I have her blocked on Facebook now, Lisa. Right? I love her to bits.
Blocked your own sister on Facebook.
Paul, my piece is so important to me. If anyone annoys me slightly, even if it's my fault, gone. Yeah. You know? I love her to bits. She's my sister. But there was a time, even back then, I skipped totally over, sorry, where she actually, she was only a kid. This was in between, as far as I recall, it was in between when the foster placement broke down and I went to the residential unit. She fostered me, legally fostered me, and she was still only a bloody kid, you know. So she would have been, I don't know, 20, 21 or something like that. I haven't a clue, I can't remember. But she legally fostered me, and we had a house together. You know, we had an apartment together up in the square, and that was for like a year or something. And then that broke down because she gave me one rule: you're going to school, you're going to college. That's it. That's what you're doing. And I didn't go.
So you learned that.
Then I ended up transitioning back over. Yeah.
There's a lot of people you owe a lot of shit to.
Absolutely, 100%. You know? No doubt about it for a single second. Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Take me to the next part that I think we're going to see people vanish.
Okay.
We're going to see people. Hopefully how not. Did you turn all this shit around to what you're doing today?
How did I get to that? Okay.
Let's just pull this back a little bit.
Yeah.
You have discovered that you've had to work a bit harder than everyone else. You've got yourself into situations which you clearly had to get out of.
Yeah.
You've had to dig for information quite a lot.
Yep.
You've had to dig about your dad. You had to dig about your ma. You had all this fucking shit to try and figure out in your head. You're constantly scraping for information. In the midst of that scraping, I'm getting the sense you started to enjoy that digging.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got probably obsessed with it, as most entrepreneurs do.
Yep.
And the next thing you're like, okay, well, hang on a minute. I'm fucking good at this.
Yeah.
I can turn this shit into a business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the time it was actually
What is it?
We'll get to that now. Yeah. Well, how we got to that. So actually when I was homeless, that's when I became more interested in how did I end up here. You know, I was looking, I think that's what it stems from. I was looking for someone to blame. You know, that was it. Mm-hmm. You know, because at the time it was everyone's fault but mine. You know, but it's only now looking back that I can say, geez, I would have kicked me out. I would have gave me a slap across the head.
Yeah,
way
which that's
before
what I like
that.
About because you're not like you make a mistake in life, and that's what life is about, living, right? Yep. Let's be honest.
Yep.
You make mistakes. Sometimes we get drunk, we do stupid shit, and then next day you realise you shouldn't have done that.
Yep.
And we've all done it. And if you haven't done
it, you're
a liar.
On the weekly.
What? Who cares?
Yeah.
It's life.
Yeah.
You can't live in the past. You learn from these mistakes and you move on.
That's it.
But again, and for anyone to say that maybe listening to this, well, I don't make mistakes, you're a liar.
Yeah.
Right? We all make mistakes.
Yeah.
But you've clearly seen this little thing niggled up here, and like I watched a lot of your YouTube shit as well.
Yeah, pretty sure.
And I seen that, oh, what the fuck is he doing?
Yeah.
And I interested in, you know, and then I turn it off and I might see it for another month or two, and you're like, you're at this phone thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I still don't understand quite what you do.
A lot of people don't.
So
yeah. Even my closest friends and family still don't understand. Like I'd be over in Baghdad and I'll come back after 2 weeks and I'd be like, what's up, you know, and they don't know what question to ask because they've no idea what he's doing there or whatever, you know, it still happens quite a lot. So at the time when I was homeless, I think it stems from me looking for someone to blame. I said, like, I wanted to know how did I end up here, etc. And that's when I began to dive into the actual day of when I was placed in foster care, you know, because still at that, I'm still young, you know, I was, and I get it now, you know, I wouldn't want to be telling a 16-year-old who's so impressionable, who's so vulnerable, whatever, like this traumatic thing that happened, you know, going into detail. I wasn't mentally developed enough to be able to deal and process with that. So I get that, absolutely. But I begin to dive into it. But because it was back in 1991, it's not as easy as my job today, opening up a laptop and accessing databases all over the world. I had to actually go to the National Library in, Wicklow Street? It's Wicklow Street. Yeah.
I can't read properly.
Can yeah. No,
I'm fine looking at me here.
Yeah, yeah.
My library.
Yeah, all good.
I'll just give you a buzz if I need to find that.
So I went there and they have the newspaper archives over the past like 100 years or something. So every single newspaper that's ever been out, they have the archives of it. And this was crazy. So I knew the date range. It was between this date and this date from when I was born until when I went into care. So if something happened within that time, I want to know what. So I went in with the date range and I said to the girl, I said, before she actually seen me looking around, you know, I said, how can I help you? Like I was homeless, like in the depths of homelessness at the time. So she was probably thinking, is this fella looking for someone to sleep in the corner, you know, this kind of thing. So I totally get, at first she was like, what are you doing here? Like, and I said, look, and I was just completely open. I said, look, this is where I'm at. This is what I want to know. This is what I want to know. Please, can you help me? And she just took that as her mission then for the next couple of weeks. Like, literally, she taught me how to use these machines. So she goes into the back. She says, yeah, we have the archives here. Let me go and get. She says, but this is going to be lots of papers, newspapers, you know. So let's just break it down. Let's start with this between this month and this month. And let's start with the main like newspapers. Mm. Said, okay, cool. So she goes into the back and I'm expecting her to come out with like a pile of newspapers. And she comes out with a shoebox. I'm thinking, what the hell is going on? And she opens it up and it's the old like film. Yeah, so all of it was documented. This was digitizing back in the day, you know, instead of throwing it into a scanner and stuff. They scan it and put it onto the film and you put it onto this reel and you're looking on the screen and you're flicking through next page, next page, next page. That went on for weeks, okay? And it was a good thing. It gave me a sense of purpose, you know, gave me something to do during the day. It kept me out of the rain. That, I remember that girl gave me a lunch one day because I used to leave for lunch because there's one of the facilities, Brother Luke's, over the other side in Smithfield. So I'd have to leave there and get over there for a certain time to get lunch. If I don't, I'm not eating for that day, you know. And she knew, because every day I'd say, will you hold these? I'll be back after lunch. I have to go for lunch. And eventually I told her why I had to go for lunch, blah, blah. And I remember she used to bring an extra sandwich with her lunch and stuff. And she said, look, sit down. There's a sandwich. There's a drink. Stay there, you know.
Right.
Bye. I still don't even know her name or nothing. But
I'm sure you're going to be allowed to find that out.
I'll find that out, yeah. So I flicked through, and eventually then I turned the page, and there it was, you know, there it was. I won't get too much into it, but yeah, there it was. And that kind of opened up things. So that we'll come back to that, okay? That's how I developed the specialist career that I'm involved in now, okay? But before I got to there, I looked at some YouTube videos at this company, European Security Academy. I seen all the lads going around doing weapons training. And I said, I'm doing that. And all the lads said, you're crazy. You're mad. You know, you haven't got much money at the minute. Why are you looking to save $2,500 to fly over for 2 weeks to Poland to do all this training? I said, because one day I'm going to go to Iraq and I'm going to work in Iraq and this is what I'm going to do. And for years, the lads laughed and laughed and laughed. And sure enough, a year into that, doing the training and going back for different training, the company said, hey, look, you're pretty good at this. Do you want to work for us? We'll pay for all your training. We'll pay for everything. You know, I was like, yeah, cool, let's do it. And I spent 8 years working with them, you know, training, providing firearms, tactical firearms, combat medicine and intelligence gathering training for some of the biggest special forces units, intelligence agencies, law enforcement, military units all over the world.
Slow it down, kiddo.
Yeah. Okay.
Tell me a little bit more about that. So okay. you
yeah,
this is what I'm telling you. Like, so just give us an example of what that may look. And I know you can't give names, right?
Yeah,
I don't
want to
go to
I-Card.
Well, let's just say, like, just give us an example to try and.
So in the early years when I was working with ESA, I was providing tactical firearms training. So I was training people in firearms, how to use firearms safely, safe weapon manipulation, this kind of thing, okay? And then they paid my training and stuff to get me certified and educated in tactical combat casualty care, TCCC. So, like, how to deal with gunshot wounds, how to deal with amputations and all of this kind of thing. And I was training that for a while. And the whole time since doing that thing in the library and research and that, I was doing that as a hobby back home and learning different things and taking that methods onto the digital realm of the internet and finding all these different information that's there, you know. So I was doing that for years, and this is what's called OSINT, Open Source Intelligence Gathering. So I went to the company and I said, look, yeah, okay, we're door kickers, you know, we're training SWAT teams, we're training all this. But this is where warfare is going. This is where, you know, business is going. You know, it's intelligence. It's intelligence-driven warfare. Tactical command needs intelligence to operate, you know. And I was told, no, Justin, we do firearms training. We're door kickers. You know, this is it. For about 2 years, they said this. I said, lads, you have to listen. And then one day I got a phone call. Justin, the National Warfare College in Poland is after calling us, and they asked, do we do OSINT? This is the thing you've been talking about for 2 years. I said, yeah. I said, now are you going to listen? And he said, yeah, are you ready? I said, I'm ready for 2 years. Like, I'm waiting on you guys. And he flew me over to Poland, and I had one student. and he was a PhD professor, the head professor from the National Warfare University in Poland. And here's me, a couple of years before, on the streets, you know, teaching this fourth student in this classification that I developed, is a PhD professor, you know, and I smashed that course over, and he gave me an incredible reference and feedback and stuff. And they said, Justin, whatever you need, we're doing this now, you know, because they listened to, because the Polish government came back and said, yep, more of this, please. Mm. And I was the only guy. So that was it. So we rolled that out entirely. Yeah.
Through loads of different countries.
Yeah, everywhere.
You've sold out everything you've ever done since.
Yeah, really. Every single course I sold out. Every single course over the past number of years. Yeah.
So what does it look like then again? Just give us an example of some, like, say you come to me.
Yep.
Sorry, I may make a balls of this.
No, you're fine. This is good because it helps us to actually break it down. Yeah. I forget. I'm in this space for years.
Yeah.
You know, I forget.
It's like how technical training, it may be. You come in, you might be stuck in a couple of things.
I'd be lost in your world. Yeah.
We break it down, systemize it. You understand it. You go, oh, okay, there it is in front of me.
Yeah.
And it might take you a year. It might take you a month.
Yeah.
Some people sink. So describe that in your world to me.
Okay, so the thing with OSINT, okay, open source intelligence gathering, okay, so it's as easy to say, it's exactly what it says, okay, it's gathering intelligence from open sources, okay, but people need to understand the classification of intelligence is not information. Information and intelligence are very, very different things, you know. You can get information, you get data. Data is just digital information. It's just information you obtain from a digital source.
Mm.
And then you have intelligence. Intelligence needs to be two things. One, verified and actionable. Okay. It needs to be something. It needs to be a piece of information that you verify and you can act on, whether it's operationally, whether it's strategically in business, whether whatever it may be, you know. Mm. So it ranges quite a lot. It ranges quite a lot. Like, look, our students can be everything from sales, from marketing, to you name it, you know, right up to, like, I've set up intelligence agencies for governments, you know, like, right to that level, you know, where you're breaking down whole intelligence units for prison services, for everything in between, for special forces. Only recently, I can't say too much, and I don't want to sound like that James Bond guy, but NDAs are fairly strong when you're dealing with governments. But only recently, I was training, we actually made history. We were the first private person or private entity ever to work with this special forces unit. Yeah, because it's only ever worked with different governments. That's it. You know, and we're the first one ever to do it.
Right.
So that was a huge achievement for us. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you're gathering. So let's just take up to this thing here.
Okay.
Right.
Right. The tracker, the sensor.
Now,
yeah.
I would have thought, before I talked to you backstage earlier on, that we're fairly secure. You were like, I just speak this into the microphone. Yeah. I can break any code in your phone in seconds.
Essentially, yes.
And I was like, no, hang on a minute. I've got codes for everything. Ozzy jigs him around. He goes, I don't care. That thing is open. And I was like, what?
Yeah. Easily. I should have brought some toys. I should have brought some toys. Yeah.
I always say this as well. There will be a part two.
Yeah. Well, no problem. Tuned. A part two. If the guys want to hear it, absolutely. I'll bring in some nice toys and stuff. Like you have laptops here. You're recording stuff and all of this. Yeah. How do you store it? Do you use USB sticks? And hey, Ozzy, will you throw that onto that? You know, if I dropped the USB stick here on the floor before I left and I said, thanks, guys, see you later, best of luck, blah, blah. When you're locking up, or you and Ozzy are locking up, and you see what's this? I don't know. Plug it in there, see what files on it. Is it ours, you know, whatever. You plug that in. The second you put that to your computer, that's now our computer. I can access that computer anywhere in the world. I can turn on the mic. I can turn on the camera. I can look at every message, every keystroke you're putting in, everything, you know, everything. But that's just the USB mechanism. We can do that. I can send you a PDF file. I can send you an image. I can say, hey, Paul, I've seen this property just came available. Are you interested? Bang, send you over a PDF. Yeah, let me check it out. You open that PDF. That's our computer now. That's it, you know.
I hope to God when they were lining you up for this podcast, they didn't shoot you out of my banks.
No. I only got an email address today. Where's that money gone? Yeah.
Don't reply to anything.
But it's
shouldn't have even let you in, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, I'm telling, that's what I said. Yeah, look at it, bring me laptop, the lights would have been flickering. But funny enough, look, and I don't want to sound too James Bondy, this kind of crap, okay? Because
like, no, but there is another little world out there.
There absolutely is. There absolutely, like, there's a whole world out there people believe only takes place in novels, in movies. It's far from it. It's far from it. I've been training intelligence agencies for a number of years, and everything right down to, but I won't get too much into it, but train intelligence agencies and covert assets and operational units, you know, that you know, these James Bond figures that go and, you know, into foreign countries and they're undercover, you know, whatever it may be. But everyone thinks this, like the likes of the USB and stuff, you know. I have a cable, a phone cable. It's called the OMG cable. And it looks like any other phone cable, okay? Mm. Not only that, I have a kit where I can make it look exactly like yours, whether you have a white one or a black one, whether you use Type C, Type A, whether it's USB, whether it's iPhone, whatever. And I can divvy this up. And I guarantee you now, if I put it down beside yours, you wouldn't know which one. Okay? Right. And you plug this into your phone. And the second you plug this in, it will charge your phone. Nothing will look anyway suspicious. And I now have access to your device from anywhere in the world. You know, I can listen in on the phone calls. I can do whatever the hell I want. This cable was initially designed by the NSA. You know the NSA?
No.
Yeah. A National Security Agency in the USA. These are like the USA digital cyber warfare element. They're one of the best in the world. Well, one of the best in the world. We'll go with that.
They're up at your top table.
Yeah. And it was initially designed by them, and it was called Cottonmouth, was the code name for this, and it cost €25,000 to develop. We can access things like that nowadays for €200 online, you know, anonymously, and I can get delivered to here, you know. And that's that commercialization of this kind of technology is what's opening up the world of intelligence, you know, because, yes, okay, it's important for governments, it's important for agencies, it's important for covert assets and this kind of stuff to have this capability, to have this capacity and operational elements. But because, you know, it's so commercialized, you know, some mafia cartel guy, he can do the same. You know, he can do the same. He can leave outside your car out there, you know, he can leave a cable, he can leave a USB stick, you know, and like that, and gain access to your networks, to whatever you're doing, you know? Yeah.
So there's a certain level then that, okay, so we think we're protecting ourselves. You're probably like,
no,
not a chance.
Yeah.
Like as a business and as owners and as protecting you and your family and your own family life, where you see people on Facebook and there's photos up of this, photos up of that, you'd be saying, don't put your head in anything.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Why wouldn't you in your average?
I'll give you an example now in a second, okay? But it's important for us to clarify, you know, for everyday people, that's not an issue. You know, it's not an issue. It depends on your threat landscape. If you are a business owner and you have competitors out there and it is a competitive market and, you know, if there's high money involved in big deals, you need to open yourself up to these, if anything, just to know that that's possible.
Yeah.
Because if you're not aware of something, how can you protect against it?
Well, I never, ever.
Yeah.
Like, would have dreamt.
Yeah. And people, honestly, I mean it. This is commercialized where people are offering this as services. I don't. I do to governments, to any legitimate entities, like, absolutely. But, like,
because there's obviously another side to that as well that could go terribly wrong.
Absolutely.
With that skill set.
Yeah, 100%. There's no gray area when it comes to, we have what's known as the red hat, black hat, gray hat. Okay. Yeah. So a white hat is someone that is, you know, like an ethical hacker, you know, this kind of thing. Okay. And then you have your black hat, which is the bad guy, you know, and you have your red or gray hat, which is in between. But when it comes to this line of work, there's no gray area. It's white or black and that's it. You know, it's a thin line, but it's one or the other. There's no gray area involved there. And because it's a very dangerous thing. But like I said, it depends on your threat landscape. For everyday people, you don't have to worry too much. But the likes of Facebook, okay, we have access to facial recognition software. I can take a picture of you now and I can find right down to videos. If there's ever a video put up on the internet with you in the background, maybe it's a tourist and you're sitting in a coffee shop at the back, this will say, hey, look, he's here. You know, and we may be able to identify where that is. etc., and begin to link up what we call a pattern of life analysis, you know. But not even that. Okay, so this facial recognition, how this came about. So this, you spoke earlier about kids having social media and phones, this kind of thing. So the facial recognition.
While we're on that, like, we got the kids a phone because the kids wanted a phone. Like, these
they have to, in today's day and age,
ruining kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I truly, and I know we were talking about backstage again. I was like, it's not, and you don't have to take your kid's phone, and you don't have to.
No,
they're different kids.
There's ways
them.
You can secure and you can monitor without being invasive to your child's privacy. It's important to give them that sense of privacy, to give them that sense of responsibility. That's how they grow as an adult, you know. But there is ways that you can secure a bit more, you know, monitor it to a certain degree, you know, to make sure you can limit, you can set up DNS protocols that say, okay, block these websites, you know, anything like that, you know, don't let them go to these websites. If they try search for this, notify me.
So you
can be aware and be proactive and
And just to prevent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So just about phones then, because I know you talked about it earlier on as well. Like, I'm fucking amazed of all the different things. Again, I'm not in the world amazed. I don't mean that way. Starting to say to myself, man, I need to protect myself a little bit more, because we've tons of different stuff going on. This is probably like, you know, in the world you're in now, there's probably your average say person said, I don't need to worry about it.
Exactly.
But I mean, for business owners and for people,
absolutely, people controlling assets, you know, people that are working big deals, anything like this, because so much more that these kind of methods are so commercialized, you know, your competitor, if they're that way morally inclined or declined, should I say, you know.
Well, when money kicks in,
exactly,
a lot of people are different beasts.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they're very nice at the start, and then, you know, next thing we go, oh, Jesus Christ, is that really her?
We provide surveillance. We provide covert surveillance for a number of different clients and this kind of thing. A lot of them can be business clients, this kind of thing. We provide a lot of different cases and stuff, but very often we get people, you know, and it's very quick that you can identify, hold on, that's a competitor. You know, maliciously intent.
Yeah.
You know, so therefore it's not for us. We're not that kind of service provider. Get it elsewhere.
Draw a line straight to it. And then obviously, you know, naturally would come to your head. I want to go back to phones.
Yeah, of course.
Naturally as well, when we first started talking earlier on, I was like, did you ever see the film where they're running around town going, hey, your wife is cheating there. Here he is with Sharon in the corner, and Sharon and I was going, oh, fuck. That's what I thought of you first, but you're like, man, that stuff is just simple to do.
That's easy stuff.
So,
I find a lot, with like, I provide a lot of this training, not just to governments, to different government entities, but we provide public courses. We have ones for public, you know, for people that want to learn a bit more about open source intelligence. And fair enough, okay, if you're not going to use it in an operational capacity or anything like that, that's fine. But it's a lot of the time I get people that take my course and say, do you know what? It's not something I'm pursuing as a career, but I'm so glad I totally understand now, you know, what kind of vulnerabilities are out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Easily. Like I said, I should have brought my laptop. We could have typed
in
some
stuff. I'm not allowing your laptop ever to come into this building.
I don't blame you, but
I'm now nervous of your cap even on your head.
and you should be, if that's your threat landscape. I don't want to be a fearmonger or anything like that.
No, but
if that's not your threat landscape, you're fine. You know, I like I said, when I set up my company Elysium, you know, you've done it, you've set up companies, you know. You set up a company and you're getting your logo, you're putting it everywhere, your website, social media, everything. It's important to get out there, get that footprint. But very, very quickly into the game, we said, okay, we have some serious, serious clients here because of the selective services we're offering. We have some serious clients. Let's pull back. You know, we don't want to dilute our services by taking on lots of clients, you know, taking on lots of work. So we said, let's just focus on high value clients, high value products, you know, and delivering to that certain quality, you know. So very quickly, after 6 months, we took the website down. We took our Facebooks down, our social media, and we're like, okay, we have what we need here, you know. But when you're dealing with these kind of clients, you know, their threat landscapes are very, very much different to normal day-to-day people, you know.
Fantastic.
Like, we provide everything from what we call physical pen testing. Okay, so they'll contact and say, hey, look, I have this building, I have this server room, etc. You know, it holds very, very vital data, whatever it may be, and we will try get in there and get to it. Like
where? So they're you. So they're saying to you, okay, I'm going to pay you.
Yep.
To show break me get in here.
Yeah.
And you break can get in.
Yep.
They obviously have to up
we
their security.
We always get in. We always get in. We always get in. Yeah, yeah. But it's good because if you're not being proactive, if you're not identifying your vulnerabilities, whether in anything, in business, in physical property, in whatever it may be, if you're not identifying these vulnerabilities, someone else will.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. So if you don't identify them to closing up that gap, to improve on them vulnerabilities, someone else will, and they manipulate and they will use it against you.
Yeah.
You know?
So and it probably all boils down to money at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
And it's some, there's always, I'm sure if you take a case on, if you, you have to take a case on trying to identify what the challenge is.
Yeah. One, what the challenge is, and two, why does this client want this? Because if we feel that's nefarious in any way, like if they're looking to investigate someone in order to find an element of leverage,
yeah.
You know, to say, oh, well, look, we identified that, okay, a married man, and we've identified you're on these dating services.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't, blah, blah, blah. If it's any way malicious intent at all, we'll just drop the case. We'll say, I'm sorry, unfortunately, we couldn't find any information out there. Best of luck. If you need that in the future, let us know.
Yeah, you know? Which is a nice way to do business.
Yeah.
Take me back to the phone. How do we, that every person and their kids
open the window
phone
and launch it out.
Really?
Really, they are that bad. At the end of the day, you know, think of phones back in the day, okay? When smartphones first came out, they were costly.
Yeah.
Okay, don't get me wrong, they still are, you know, these main smartphone elements today, like 1,400, 1,500 quid. Like the phone I have there, I actually have a totally different phone. We'll get to it in a minute. It's an interesting phone. But the one I have there, because I was flying out to a certain country recently, and I broke my good phone, so I had to pick one up. But it was €100. A smartphone, €100, it has absolutely everything. You know, it's like anything. You're on Facebook. When was the last time you paid your Facebook membership?
Paid?
Yeah.
Ozzy, when did I last pay my Facebook?
When's the last pay for Facebook, Ozzy? Or Snapchat? When's the last time you paid for Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram? Okay.
No, that was an ad.
Yeah. You don't pay for Facebook.
Oh, you mean that's in the actual app?
Yeah.
No.
How much money do Facebook make every year?
Billions.
Okay, why? Because if something is free in today's day and age, or it's very low minimal cost, you are the commodity. You are the product. Yeah. It's your data, you know. Yeah. And phones nowadays, they have so many sensors to track everything. You hold your phone up 2 feet extra
so
over the ground, they
for
know
like marketing, advertising,
everything.
Right. Okay.
All that data is sold, and not even that. Most of the time, it's leaked. You know, most of the time. Mueller from the ex-director of the FBI, he had a saying, he said, look, he says there's two types of companies in this world, those that have been hacked and those that will be hacked, you know, because we're in that day and age, we're in the digital day and age, you know, anything that connects to the internet is vulnerable to exploit, anything at all.
Right.
Now, we have pacemakers that are connected to the internet nowadays. We are just looking at a case study, let's say, an example, recently with a certain unit, we just discussed how it was capable. We have something called Shodan, okay? So you have Internet of Things. So maybe you have some lights here or something you can turn on and off, you know, or cameras, anything like that, you know, because it's connected to the internet. You can't Google, say, show me my camera in my place. No, okay? You go to a certain protocol, and it's called an Internet of Things, okay? It's an IoT device, and all of them are on Shodan. That includes things like pacemakers. Now we end up finding people's pacemakers that are connected to the internet on Shodan.
Jesus Christ.
And from there, we can identify what software is running on the pacemaker. We can identify the serial number, the make and model, etc. And we might begin to try to identify vulnerabilities. Now, if you wanted a terrible thing to do, what we were just talking about.
So all our cars,
everything.
All our onboard, use your onboard computer. Yeah. That's going to take you to the destination.
Do you know most cars after 2018, by law, most cars have SIM card capacity in them. A lot of times it's called telematics, and they don't tell you when you buy it in a dealership. Most of the time it is connected to somewhere, you know, and they don't tell you this, and everything is tracked. You know, when you hook your phone to your Bluetooth to your car radio, and you say, allow contacts. Okay. That's not saying allow contacts. That's saying I allow you to access all the data on my phone, but only show me the contacts when someone rings, show me the name. So in the back end, in that ECU of that car, that has a memory function within it that actually has a lot of data from your device, maybe every cell tower it's pinged to, you know, anything at all. Yeah.
Woo!
That's just, it's not even the tip of the iceberg, Paul, I mean it.
Right.
Honestly, yeah.
So, back to the phone.
Yeah.
You have created a phone that's, bulletproof.
Well, nothing is bulletproof. Yeah. So essentially, we've built a phone from the ground up, like literally from the ground up. We removed every piece of software, every bit of firmware, everything from the chipsets and the ROMs, all gone. So we had a brand new just hardware device. And we have built an operating system up around that that's strictly only for privacy and security. You know, that's it. That is it. Yeah.
Right.
It's pretty good.
How much you want them babies?
It depends on the area of use. Like I sent one off today to a client. He's in Ukraine. He's going to Ukraine. You know, their companies and their businesses are operating now in Ukraine. And I had to send one this morning to Ukraine. We're looking at $1,500 for that client because it's in Ukraine. We have to pay for different and amenity services. So you have VoIP numbers and everything else that we need to set up. We need to get eSIMs for certain global region capacity. It depends on maybe how much data usage you want per month, you know, this kind of thing. But you're looking at anywhere between 1,000 to 1,500 euros.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Jesus and Christ. It's a pretty, pretty good phone. Like my other phone. So like if I unlock with my thumb, it just goes normally into my normal Facebook, social media, etc. If I unlock with that finger, it's not actually that finger, but we'll say it for the camera. Okay. If I unlock with a different finger, it flips over to a completely different operating system that is almost secure communications, all of that. Because again, not to sound too James Bondish, but and a lot of people, anyone that kind of knows the crack, but I travel a lot with work everywhere, from Baghdad to bleeding, you name it, everywhere in between. And when I'm going to airports, people are interested. You know, I work with different governments. I work with certain agencies where the other agencies want to know, okay, who is this guy? Why is he working with them? It makes sense. If I'm an intelligence agency and you are, let's say, training a different competitor or something, and you're going through my facility, I'm going to want to stop you and say hello.
Yeah.
So what happens is most of the time when I'm going to airports, I get interrogated for 3-4 hours. You know, just go chew on your paperwork, USBs, which is not a good thing for them plugging in my USBs. I can promise you that. Yeah. And same thing. And a lot of times they'll ask, open the phone. And I could sit there and say, no, you haven't the right. And they don't. They're asking. It's not a demand, you know. And I'd say, no problem. Here you go. And I'll lock it with me to them and they'll go to it all day long.
You won't go with the index finger now, the left finger now.
Yeah. Whereas the other one, I might stay more than a couple of hours.
All right.
Yeah.
How do... Right, let's wind that back, right? Yep. Because that's some serious heavy shit. Yep. And that is in a different world out there that people do.
Yep.
But look, again, we don't know what our kids are on. We don't know what we're on. We don't know how do we protect ourselves? Just a little bit more. Like, is there a couple of five little quick tips that you can say, look, just don't do this anymore now because you're really fucking...
Definitely, just smash the phone. No, I'm only asking. No, definitely, just be cautious of what you're putting up, okay? What I mean is, one, social media, okay? Okay, we live in a day and age. I'm all over social media. For someone that spends my career teaching people how to hide on the internet, you know, I'm everywhere on the internet. You're putting me down, there's loads of stuff there. I'm on every social media platform. I'm very open on it. I'm posting stuff all the time.
Yeah.
But be cautious of what you post, you know? I would advise refraining from putting up pictures of your kids and all of this kind of thing, you know? Obviously, it's a part of life, you know, if there's going to be family events, if there's going to be communions, Christmas, whatever, I get that. But just try not to put it up. And I don't want to scaremonger, but like we've come across cases where we've done cases against certain individuals and we found databases where they have took pictures of their friends' kids that their friends posted online. And they've used AI technology that they can take this picture and that will like make that child naked. The AI program makes it naked, and then they were selling them pictures on the dark web, you know? Yeah. Like,
okay, now, man.
Again, I don't want to scaremonger, you know? I don't.
No, so let's say one protection. You need to be aware.
So, sorry.
Let's say for banking as well. Is there any extra fucking things we can use? Because, I mean, we're living in a world where everything every day they're saying, don't scam, don't, you know, what about
Okay. When first things first, VPN, a virtual private network. Okay. What I recommend is Proton VPN. Okay. Proton VPN. You can download.
What the hell is that?
So a VPN is essentially, okay, so we're on the same network here, okay?
Yeah.
So let's say we are connected to Wi-Fi. I could open up certain programs, a program called Wireshark, and I can sniff the network and see, okay, what data is going from what device, what type of data is, etc. But if you have a VPN on, it's encrypting all of that data before it even goes. You know, so let's say if you imagine this is you and you're communicating with this bank, whatever it is, that information you're sending, it's called a man in the middle attack. If I'm in the middle, I can see all that data. It's like you handing me a piece of paper to give to Ollie, you know, and if you just wrote it in plain text, I can open it, look at it and say, okay, here you go, Ollie.
So that's happening.
But if you have a code that only you and Ollie know, you know, and I take it and I open it, I have no idea what that is.
So
that's what a VPN is doing. It's taking your data, it's encrypting it in a way that can only be decrypted with the actual service provider or whatever it may be. Right. And it's free. It's Proton VPN. Anybody that uses Gmail in this day and age or Yahoo or any of them, stay away from them. Stay away from them. Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to say Google's reading all your emails, but Google's processors and programs scan your emails for certain words. Mm. Okay. Let's say I text you. I say, man, I seen that lovely Mercedes you got the other day.
Mm.
You know, I emailed that to you. I send you that on Facebook. How many times have you talked about something with someone and scrolled down to your phone?
I'm always trying to figure this shit out. How the hell is that?
That's how. Okay, because certain keywords are everything you do, like even WhatsApp. WhatsApp says end-to-end encryption.
Yeah.
Okay. It's end-to-end encryption, but it's not an encrypted data. It's encrypted on their encrypt. They have the keys for that encryption. Mm. You know, it's encrypted in terms of one man in the middle. Okay, I can't read it, but they can read it.
Yeah.
They can scan all your stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's how, because they sell that information to marketers and to Google and Google APIs and stuff to access that information and say, okay, Paul searched for Mercedes today. Paul looked at
then they start throwing
chicken
you a
curries
couple of...
and Tala today. Okay, let's take an ad for a Mercedes car and Tala and now throw that on Paul's Facebook.
Is there any chance you could possibly get a few people selling their houses and say,
absolutely,
send me a few of them leads and I can go and send them a couple of
see what else in the guy for
get rid of Ozzy.
Yeah, well first, let's just finish up in this now. I'll give some tips because I know your listeners are based around property and property markets and that. So I definitely have some really good tips for you for that. Okay. So VPN, 100%, always use a VPN, especially if you're on any sort of private or public network. Okay. Right. Dublin bus, any of these. Okay, avoid, you know, I don't want to get too graphic, but you wouldn't just put a part of you into somewhere unknown. Okay, yeah. Let's just go with that. Same with your devices. You know, we done a case study before when Dublin Bus first released these USB things on the back here. Okay, where we opened up, you pop that plastic off, there's three little triangle screws. We opened that and we had a little chipset. And similar to the USB, and we put the chipset into the wire, and we put it back, put it into it. And when someone plugged in the phone, boom, it was now our phone. You know, be careful when you're plugging.
And AirPods as well.
AirPods all the time. Not even that. Okay, what I recommend, especially people that have vehicles, you know, vehicles that are keyless entry and all of this.
Yeah.
Okay, Faraday case. I cannot stress enough.
Fuck is that?
So Faraday case is basically what's called Faraday material. Reach out to me. You can get them on Amazon. I can recommend some good ones.
I have two keyless. And I'm like, how did that thing just start?
So what happens is, so that key is constantly emitting a signal. Constantly. Okay. And what happens is when you're within range to the vehicle hears the signal and says, oh yeah, hey buddy, I'm going to let you in now. It's you. I know you. Mm. You know, we're together. We're partners. Let's go. But we get a lot of people, and it's happened to a couple of clients of mine. And even though I told them Faraday, it wasn't until the car was taken that they were called up and said, Justin, the car was took exactly like you said it was going to be, and I need your help.
So just pause a second.
Yeah.
Is that a box? Is it
It can be a box. It can be a bag. So it's a material. Like anything, it's a material.
And you stick your key into this thing at night time, is it?
Yeah. So a lot of people come home, they throw their keys on the telephone table. Well, we used to have telephone tables back in the day.
Yeah, my key was on it last night.
Yeah, exactly. So what I could do is I have a device where I can stand outside your front door with an antenna, a long range receiver antenna, and Ozzy can have the other part. Okay, so I have a transceiver, he has the receiver, and it will send that to his receiver, and he'll stand beside the car, and the car now thinks, okay, the person with the key is standing beside me. I haven't broken into your house, I haven't done anything. I've stood outside, I've captured that signal with a high power antenna. I've transferred that signal to Ozzy. Ozzy's outside your car, and we're now driving off in a lovely vehicle. You know?
So just tell me the name of that thing again.
So a Faraday.
How much is it?
You can pick one up for about 20 euros. You know, you can pick one.
Do you sell them?
Yeah, we sell them. We sell them as well, but you can get them on Amazon. No, one of the best is Titan RF. T-I-T-A-N.
Get that shit ready now. There's no point in listening to this stuff and not taking action.
I'll send you some links. You can throw it into the group to our guys and stuff. And also we have some other clients and stuff that maybe, you know, they have their certain laptop bag they've had for years, and we have the Faraday material, and we have seamstress there, and we'll actually sew it into the material. So they will say, okay, this is my laptop bag. We'll do the whole thing if they want, or if they want one pocket in it to be Faraday, where they know they throw their phone in there, their keys in there, it's not going to be sniffed.
So I'm just because my brain is flying now. Okay. So I'm going through Dublin Airport.
Yeah.
You're saying, do not connect. I'm like, I'll just get 10 minutes working here. I'll plug that laptop in. I'll plug the phone in. You're like, don't connect to fucking anything.
Yeah. Well, you go to a website nowadays. What's the first thing you need to do on the website?
Put in your email address.
Put in the email. Or even just a normal website, yeah? You go to CNN. You go to anywhere. What comes up? Accept. Accept. You know, accept or do not
19
accept.
Pages of terms and conditions behind that.
And when was the last time? So you have a smartphone, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay? You have apps on your smartphone, yeah?
Yeah.
When you downloaded that app, you had to click what?
Accept.
I accept. When was the last time you read the terms and conditions?
Never.
Exactly. Nobody does. And when you say that, you say, okay, I allow you permission. A lot of people think it's nothing. Okay, you know, like I always say, and it was actually, what's his name?
Not until 100 grand goes out of your bank.
Exactly. And it's happening all the time. But people say, well, I don't care about privacy because I've nothing to hide. That's like saying I don't care about free speech because I've nothing to say. Yeah, you know, it's just,
it doesn't. You know, I think everyone needs to increase their privacy at some level.
Definitely.
Right, for my property people that do listen in here, what is your little
What I recommend
tips?
Is get involved or start learning about Google dorking. Okay, it's called Google dorks or Boolean operators. Okay, it's using advanced search queries for Google. Okay, so let's say I search Justin Casey on Google. Okay, what's going to happen is that's going to search for Justin Casey. And after it's got what it's can there, it's going to search for Justin. It's going to search for Casey.
Mm.
Okay. If I put inverted commas, okay, one inverted comma, Justin Casey, close it. And now I search, that's saying only show me this and this. Mm. Now, if I want to search maybe, so that will bring down from like 7 million to whatever, 2 million or something like that. Mm. Okay. It mightn't be, it sound like a big jump. But you can say, okay, search for whatever keywords you have. Property, you know, plus talent, okay, before this date, after this date, and you can narrow it down and say, okay, show me only properties in this area from this date and that date that have keywords for sale, that have whatever it may be, okay, and you can narrow down your search results and refine it down to a couple of hundred results, and every single one will be exactly what you want. You can search for keywords, like properties, whatever, and you can say file type, only show me results that are PDF. You know, and you can get documents that people think are secure on servers and all this kind of thing, but they're actually public, they're open source. You know, you can find quite a lot of information. There's quite a bit. What I'll do is, if you guys want, okay, I'm not here to pitch my course, but if anyone is interested in the course,
you're actually giving us tons of information. Of course, you're entitled to give a blast out. Give a blast out of everything you want there.
So with the course, we have an online OSINT course. Maybe we might link up and we might deliver one here. Okay, we'll see. Okay,
but no. You just shut that shit down now. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, but anyone that follows Platinum, contact me and just mention Paul, mention Platinum Ventures, and we'll give you 50% off on any of the online courses.
Great stuff. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's going to be like a training course where they can go in and just help them protect her.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's more OSINT based. Okay. Mm. But throughout learning that, you will identify all your vulnerabilities. You'll find all your leaked passwords that are available online. You know, you'll find, I won't even get into it, but there's so much information out there.
And he'll help them protect themselves a little bit better.
Absolutely.
Or and that's the way the world is. Like, unfortunately, we don't stay educated in this shit. I mean, yeah. what's the
and
point?
It's such a fast-paced environment, you know. The digital world, the internet, it's growing so rapidly, so quickly, you know, and you need to keep up. But again, if anyone just has some queries, some questions, feel free to reach out to you, and you can relay them back to me or whatever the case may be. And yeah, I'm happy enough to help out anyone, any questions, anything.
What's the name of your company?
Elysium, but you won't find us anywhere.
You'll find that.
You'll find us.
So we're better off just to drop you a DM or drop you a thing.
Yeah.
Justin, very, very interesting life. Very, very interesting story. I wish you the very best of luck in the future.
Appreciate
Hopefully
it.
We get you back in here to do a couple of more things.
I'll have to bring the songs and I'll have to bring some toys.
I would have loved to finish up with a song because I know you've got some definitely things. Maybe at a couple of our events you'll bring in and show
people how to
do it. And then again, if anyone wants to chill out tonight and listen to a video or music where you've given us a proper insight of where that came from, coming direct from the heart, and now they understand where you've created this business from also searching for your past and searching something that may have, you didn't let the book close, you still went in, you digged as hard as you could and found out what you needed, found out where what gave you a bit of peace. And then you're also now have created a really, really fantastic business from all this fucking madness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Justin, well done.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Chat to you all very soon.